Great. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ramsey, and thanks to all of you for coming this morning. I look forward to learning from the other presenters and also from the discussion. So I'm going to talk about strengthening health systems in developing countries as soon as I figure out how to move this thing. Okay. So I'm going to talk first of all about USAID and actually the U.S. government more broadly, our health goals, global health goals, and some of the system challenges that we confront. Then we, in USAID, just issued our first White House-approved vision for health system strengthening. So I'll share a little bit of that with you. And in the initial request, there was a desire to touch on Ebola. So I'll talk a little bit about how I see Ebola and the experience that West Africa has been and is going through affecting the way we look at how to strengthen health systems more broadly. So the U.S. government's global health goals include ending preventable child and maternal deaths, fondly known as EPCMD, for those of you who love acronyms, and AID loves acronyms, then creating an AIDS-free generation, and protecting communities from infectious diseases. And protecting communities from infectious diseases is part of a broader goal, which is the global health security agenda. So what's different, I would say, about the goals, the way we're setting them now, particularly the first two, is they're not framed in terms of incremental improvements. They're framed in terms of final outcomes. So it's not a question of 25% better this or 30% better that, but really getting to a convergence where children and mothers in developing countries have no greater risk of dying than they do in OECD countries, and also where we no longer have the threat of HIV/AIDS facing the next generation. So our vision in USAID for strengthening health systems really is meant to support those broader global health goals. And so we focus on strengthening core health systems functions, that are needed to attain those goals and then to sustain them. Because we recognize in the context of declining official development assistance as a share of total health spending in developing countries, that we're not the big part of the picture anymore, and countries increasingly are taking on responsibility for their own health systems. So we focus on what we can do that's catalytic and will help countries as they take on direct responsibility. So a little bit about why we focus on strengthening health systems. And the big answer, I would say, is that countries that we work with in developing countries, generally low income, soon a number of countries moving into middle income status, are not able to ensure access to basic services for their whole population. So this is meant to spend the next 14 minutes, because it takes a while to actually digest, but this is looking at equity and access to skilled attendance at birth. And it looks at 18 countries where we have demographic and health survey data over, so we have two points in time where we can look, two recent points of time. And what we can see, if you look at the first column to the left, it compares the most recent DHS to the earlier one and shows that national coverage on average in these countries has improved considerably over the past two DHSs. So it's gone up by over 50%. The national coverage is on average 53%, and the progress is between the two DHSs a 26% percentage point increase. But if you look to the right, where you look at the urban-rural coverage and the top-bottom quintile coverage, you can see that the improvements have not been as good. So in Indonesia, for example, urban-rural coverage, the difference has widened. Likewise, for the coverage difference between the top and bottom quintile, that has widened as well in a number of countries, including Bangladesh, Nepal, Ethiopia, as well as Indonesia. So there are challenges that still need to be addressed. We know the technical interventions that work, but actually getting them to everyone when they need them is still a challenge for many countries. So we increasingly are working towards a shared concept of universal health coverage. And sometimes in the United States, that's not a popular term, especially in some political circles, because it gets associated with Obamacare. But it's the concept of making sure that everyone, the whole population, so you look at the cube and it moves in three different dimensions. So it's who's covered, the population, which services are covered, and which costs are covered. So the ideal scenario, potentially, in a utopia would be that the blue would grow to cover the entire cube, and everyone who needs services would get all the services they need, and they wouldn't face any financial hardship. That's, no country is there, and so for every country, universal health coverage is an aspirational goal. And that's what we saw with the Sustainable Development Goals, which are now framed for all nations, not just developing countries. And they talk about the pathway towards universal health coverage. So what is USAID's approach to strengthening health systems? You can see in the middle that universal health coverage, or UHC, is the focus. And the way we define it is in terms of four different dimensions: financial protection, access to quality essential services, equitable population coverage, and responsiveness, meaning that people's dignity and choice and freedom from stigma are respected. So what we do to contribute to those goals is help countries strengthen these six basic functions of the health system. And these were defined by the World Health Organization as the building blocks of the health system. And sometimes it looks a little linear, which is somewhat contrary to systems thinking, because we recognize that systems are interrelated, many functions that work together. But this is more for the conceptualization. We start with this basic identification of the six functions. And you can see on the very far left that we have these three concepts, which really we consider to be cross-cutting of all of our work in strengthening health systems. So it's engaging the private sector, particularly as the U.S. We have a very strong national orientation towards engaging with the private sector, so we carry that forward in our work in developing countries. We also have a strong focus on working at the community level in recognition of the importance of the community to solving health problems, and then a focus on prevention and promotion, since many of the challenges that we face are things that can best be addressed initially through prevention and promotion. So working in those six functions, we strive to improve the dimensions of universal health coverage so that we can sustain improvements in health and sustain improvements in the performance of the health system. So our goal statement, or our vision statement, is that we partner with countries to provide sustained and equitable access to essential high-quality health services that are responsive to people's needs without financial hardship, thereby protecting poor and underserved people from illness, death, and extreme poverty. So this is your taxpayer money at work, those of you who come from this country. The six functions, as I mentioned, are finance, human resources, governance, information, medical products, and service delivery. And just some illustrations of the kinds of things that we support. In the area of financing, we support countries to introduce and then to institutionalize practice of national health accounting. So one of the questions I think for this session was, you know, can you give some examples of where strengthening health systems makes a difference? So I can just give you the example of Kenya. Several years ago, when we worked with the government to do their first national health accounts, they rejected them because they couldn't believe them, because it showed that people, households, were spending so much of their own money on health that the government said, no, this can't be right. So then they did it again, and sure enough, it showed that the households were spending a lot of their own money on health. And that led to the Minister of Health being able to advocate for a $300 million annual increase in the health budget, which in Kenya's context was a pretty substantial increase. So in human resources, we work on the human resources information system. You may have heard of IRIS. It's a public source or open source program that's available. It's a suite of programs actually that are available to help countries manage the human resource function in the health system. And I'll talk a little later on about an example of where working with a country on health human resources has had a strong impact. And then we work on governance, working to improve health policies and regulations for access. One of the things that we increasingly, I think, in the global community recognize is that talking about universal health coverage, where a country can't regulate the quality of the human resources or the drugs or the health service delivery infrastructure, is to some extent meaningless. So we need to work on improving capacity to regulate and ensure quality. Then in the area of information, we work on scaling up basic information support systems, so the district health information system, the demographic and health surveys, and as we looked earlier at that graphic using demographic and health survey data, you can see that it's very powerful and countries use that information a great deal to improve their policies. And then in the area of medical products, we work on helping manufacturers pre-qualify for WHO sales status or WHO pre-qualification, and we train manufacturers on good manufacturing practices. And then in service delivery, we work on improving the quality of service delivery. And increasingly, we're looking to understand better how incentives can be used to improve the quality of service delivery. So another example of where health system strengthening shows an impact, this is using human resources for health example. So in the Dominican Republic, we helped the government to improve its management of its human resource database. And that analysis of the human resources for health showed that the country had, the Ministry of Health had 10,000 ghost workers and over 2,000 retiring workers who were both receiving both salary and pension, which is my dream scenario as a civil servant. I can't wait. But the resolution of that problem led to $6 million savings per year. So the Ministry of Health was able to use those savings to contract a significant number of new workers and new health workers and health promoters, and also to increase the salary of the existing actual workforce. And that led to more pregnant women knowing their HIV status, a higher share of HIV-positive pregnant women on ARVs prior to delivery, and a higher share of HIV-exposed newborns initiating ARVs at birth. So sometimes we face the challenge of articulating how strengthening a health system really saves lives. And so these are just a couple examples of that. Now this is a chart which hopefully you can see well enough to be impressed by. It looks at the results of a systematic review that we commissioned of reviews of evidence of health system strengthening and the impact that different health system strengthening interventions had on a variety of dimensions. So what I put here is just the dimension of reducing morbidity and mortality. So there are a number of other things like increasing use of services, increasing coverage of services, but the kind of litmus test for us is, does it really have health impact? And you can see that in a number of areas in these building blocks, we have clear evidence from a variety of different countries where health system strengthening interventions demonstrate health impact, either by reducing morbidity or by reducing mortality. And if you're interested in knowing more about the study, it's on the Health Finance and Governance website for the Health Finance and Governance Project website of USAID. APT Associates implements that project, and they have a long report called Health System Strengthening Impact. This does not mean, though, that this is a comprehensive list or that this is the final set of valuable health system strengthening interventions. What it means is that these are the ones that are in the peer-reviewed systematic review literature. So you may come up and say, well, I know of another study that's not reflected here, and if so, we'd love to learn about it. So another question as we were preparing for this session, besides, you know, what does health system strengthening do and does it make a difference, is how did the experience of Ebola in West Africa affect how we think about strengthening health systems? And this is a very straightforward chart. You can see here in the over time from left to right is the progression of months from January of 2014 through September of 2014. And you can see in the blue the six most affected counties, the ones that had the highest rate of Ebola, and then in the orange, the nine least affected counties. And what you see here is the coverage of institutional delivery. So obviously institutional delivery has, at least in theory, nothing to do with Ebola. It's a different paradigm and different service delivery, but it had a huge effect. So Ebola had a huge effect on other services. And that's in some ways a reflection of how different components of the health system are related. So you can see that in all of the counties, institutional deliveries went down, but in the counties that were most affected by Ebola, they went down precipitously. And that tells us something about why it's important to pay attention to the strength of health systems. And, I'm going in the wrong direction here. Okay, so just to talk a little bit about how that has affected our thinking in the way we work on strengthening health systems. So I mentioned the six health system functions at the beginning and how we work on strengthening those. And often, in my experience, health system strengthening has been considered kind of a back office function, like we're here, we're immunizing, we're delivering, we're, you know, giving nutritional supplements. There are some people in the back office who are paying attention to human resources and financing, et cetera. And that was kind of the concept of health system strengthening. And now, what we learn from the Ebola-affected countries is that there are concepts that are important to the strength of the health system that have not been really prominent in our lexicon. And so I can't say we have this new approach because we're still working on it, but some of the things that emerged from the experience were the concept of trust, the importance of trust between the community and its official health system, and then the importance of open information for accountability. And something we hadn't really thought about as part of health system strengthening before is how to keep the health workforce safe. And basic infrastructure, I recall being involved in discussions where people were talking about how do we improve infection prevention and control in Liberia. Maybe we need to build some new facilities on the side of the existing infrastructure. And basically, these are facilities that don't have running water. They don't have sanitation. So let's get the basics right first. We also are increasingly thinking about emergency risk management as part of strengthening health systems. And then instead of thinking about the ability of the health system to perform as our outcome, we're increasingly thinking about the resilience of the health system. So it's not a concept that we have finally fleshed out and thoroughly examined, but I want to talk about a few of the ideas that are emerging. And this is drawing from work that Margaret Kruk and Mike Myers and Tornula Varpala and Bernice Dawn from the Ministry of Health and the Government of Liberia did about what is a resilient health system. And they came up with these five concepts for health system resilience: the awareness of the system, its diversity, its ability to self-regulate, its integration, and its ability to adapt. So increasingly we're looking at what does it mean for a health system to be resilient, and how can we incorporate the goals and the interventions for building health system resilience into our work in strengthening developing country health systems. So I can't tell you that we have the answers to that. I can only say that we're working on that. And leave you with a thank you.